Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
All right, you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing. We're live, and we're live as we are every week with Go Racing, goracing.ie. If you are going racing, that's the best place to get any information about cards and details of what you should expect when you get to the racetrack. Our special guest this week is Ger Lyons, who's with us in studio. Ger, how are you doing?
Good, Ger. Pleased to be here.
And Johnny Ward is here.
How are you, Ger? Good night at the race last night.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
We had the crack.
Yeah.
It's a pity our horse didn't win, but...
Ran well.
Yeah, it ran really well, but hit the front too early. And, here I am talking like a seasoned owner. I know exactly that. Apparently, he's got a very good cruising speed, but not much of a sprint, so needs to get trucked along by somebody and then present late. That didn't happen.
He's been around the blocks as well, the horse, in fairness. He's been an amazing servant, but I hope that the people knew, like Owen Sheehan and that, who's maybe not into racing, that he got some sort of a feel for it, because it's good fun.
Well, hang on, right? It was sunny. The crowd was big, everybody was having crack, and the scenery is spectacular, and you've got access to all areas when you're an owner. It's like about as good a sporting experience as you can have. Do you get used to this? You just take it for granted?
Probably take it for granted, yeah. I'd be one of the ones that don't like the crowds. They get in the way of the job. But last night, I think the stunning was there.
Galway band?
Letting on, I know what I know about music, but I seen them. And they seem to have been a bit of a crowd there.
Loads of people stayed around for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know, listen, if you have a crowded leopard sound, it's because of the band.
Unfortunately, for the flat, yeah. Do you remember Baldoyle, or do you remember
No. Do
you remember the Phoenix Park?
How old am I?
Yeah.
No, I would remember the park, I don't remember Baldoyle.
How long has Baldoyle gone?
That housing estate, I passed by it nearly. Early 80s.
Okay, so the Phoenix Park... Like, I've often regretted that I never got to go there, because I live quite close to it, and it just looked a great summer racetrack.
Fantastic, yeah. And you see, you'd have access, like, unlike Leopardstown, the locals, that would fill, and it had that summer feel to it. Now, it was a funny track, because they were racing at you all the time, you know. But Leopardstown, if Leopardstown had a sprint track, it'd be the best.
One of the best in the world, like.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't enough time today to discuss it, but, like, you've got the Champions weekend there, like, and... For me, I know you have to use the Curragh, but to me, the last race should be the big race. We should be aiming for that and just go off at a high, and that place can do that.
It's great to be involved in a horse run at Leopardstown, particularly in summer evenings. You'll always kind of remember them as well.
Yeah, totally. We all fell in love with the horse and got to see him on the beach a couple of weeks ago when we went out to Ado's Yard. The whole video is going to be coming out next week, but it would be good to think that people can have that experience and can get involved in syndicates. And just talking to various people, they were saying that there's a sustainable level of growth at the moment in terms of the numbers of people who are coming in terms of ownership. And horse racing needs that. It needs new owners. It needs to reach out and kind of broaden the appeal base, right?
Well, it had it before the tiger came and went. And the crowds are more, we just got to get, the flat people have to get used to it. People rather jump racing. You know, they like being out in the cold and the muck and the dust.
I don't think, is it not just something that maybe we need to tell everybody about a bit more and
not really.
Engage them a bit?
No, okay, the media have gone a little bit cold on us. I mean, we're not as much in the papers as we used to be regarding cards and all the things, you know, space that we get. I mean, the guys who work the media for us do as best they can, but their editors don't seem to listen to them. Our game, the flat game, which is what I play in, is it's wrongly considered a rich man's game. Do you know what I mean? Okay, you'll see the odd helicopter and the odd chic and this and that and the other, but that's not what it's about. It's a business, whereas the jump is a game and it's fun and it's the normal person can... engage in it.
I think though, if you were to try to sell like a bunch of mates a horse now, they'd be more inclined to go for a flat horse than a jump horse, the way it has developed in Ireland. Because, like, even Aidan O'Brien had two winners over the 3 days and the Derby weekend. And if you want to be involved in a jump horse, it takes a lot longer, obviously, if it's a young horse. With Dundalk and with the ability to run all year round now in the flat, with the amount of racing there is, you will get runs. even, for example, Sabrasta horse I was involved in went won straight away on the following Monday, could have run on the Thursday, then went to England, finished second. He could have run in several races over the course of a week. With jumps racing, it's, to me, it's a lot harder. It's you have to be a lot more patient. And with claimers as well, like, you can claim a horse in the flat for $4,000, he's ready to run, and then, you know, have him claimed again for $3,000 or $4,000 in a few months or a year if you want, and it's quite accessible as well, particularly with Dundalk, you know, that the all-weather is there.
Okay, well, before we solve all of the problems that flat racing has, let's talk a little bit about you.
Okay, we're 24/7 now, yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Come here, you started off as a jump jockey, right? Maybe that's not technically true. You started off by going over to America at age 20.
Obviously, I went to America because I failed at being a jump jockey.
Right, okay.
You failed at something? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, you have to fail at something to be good at something. And I was riding, I grew up beside Peter McCreary and got the bug. Like, I was born up here in Dublin and moved down to Clane in 72.
So technically you're a Kildare man?
I don't know what I am. Because I'm longer in Mead now than I am anywhere, but I'm not a Mead man.
You're born in Dublin?
Yeah.
What part of
Sundrive Road.
Sundrive Road.
Yeah, I could have been a very dangerous person.
Yeah. instead...
moved down out of the Troubles and went down there. McCreary was there, so got the bug.
As a kid in school, you were going there, kind of working, riding out.
I grew up at Willie and Peter and Tom. And they were my age group, so they were getting the rides. Their dad made me a professional rather than an amateur, which was a mistake. And I had to go off and paddle my own canoe somewhere else. And
why did that happen? I'm always interested. We've talked to everybody who's come in who's been amateur and decided not to go pro. You made the opposite decision.
I didn't make the decision. It was made for me, but it was the wrong decision.
Right.
But it was purely, you've got to remember back in them times, there was hundreds of me. You know, whereas nowadays, the young lads don't want to, you know, you speak about being a jockey, they're talking about being a disc jockey.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm talking about being a jockey, you know what I mean? But I went in there and I realised that, you know, there were Willie and Tom and Peter, so I was a long way down the list and it wasn't going to happen. And it was way before numbers became important in racing. Before, you know, 50 was a big string, 30 was a big string. I think Peter was a champion trainer with 30 horses, which is, you know what I mean? It was unheard of in these days. You know, your second yard would be full with 30 horses. But then I went to the curl with Brian Malone and I realised this wasn't happening. My problem in life was everything had to happen and it wasn't happening, so I buggered off to America.
Right, and so when you get to America, what was the plan there?
I hadn't a clue. Make it up as I went along.
Did you go over with a job in a stud farm?
No, racing yard.
Racing yard, okay.
Yeah, Carl Nasger.
What age were you back then?
18 or 19. And I had given up, because all you want to be is a jockey, and I'd given it up, and then you go there and you realise, A, you get paid what you're worth, or what you think you're worth. B, you're not working. You know, what I considered work wasn't work over there.
Explain that.
Well, I mean, in Ireland you were doing everything. You were mucking out, you were sweeping yards, you were doing X, Y, and Z. In America, you were a jockey, you were a rider, and that was it. And you were treated as such.
Okay.
So I was hopping up and down, lads were tacking, I didn't have to tack horses up, you were legging you up and you were treated like what I would consider a champion jockey at home.
Right, okay.
I was going, geez, this is clever. And then all of a sudden I started riding, good work for your man, and I could ride. I knew I could ride. And the story went on anyway, we got on brilliantly, but the secret was I had an assistant there called Johnny Burke. He's now working for Godolphin over there. The group of us that were there are huge in America at the moment. Jerry Dilger's a couple of farms, and Al Brennan is one of the biggest pin hookers in America. So we were all there at the same time. Novices.
Coincidence that you all made it, or is it?
No, you make it if you're good enough.
But the fact that you're all there together.
Yeah. No, because that.
The environment.
It wasn't there long enough. With Carl, I was riding his work, and we'd moved up to Canterbury Downs, which is Minnesota. It was the first time we had racing in Minnesota that year, 86, and the Canterbury Cup. I rode a horse called Smile. He won the Breeders' Cup that year. And eventually Carl, anyway, I always...
You rode a Breeders' Cup winner?
Hmm?
You rode a Breeders' Cup winner, if you want to work that way.
Yeah, I was coming, yeah. And
to train one now.
And Carl said to me, because I always looked lighter than I was, and Carl said, do you want to ride the horses? Like, inside I was going, absolutely, left leg, right leg, yeah, but literally I'm going to have to cut both of them off to do this, you know?
Why, what weight were you and what was the difference?
I would have been close to 11 stone.
Right.
And he would have thought I was 9 stone.
Right, okay, that's a big difference.
Yeah. And I was riding all his work. But the secret was I had Johnny Burke. And Johnny Burke was always stood at the entrance to the track. So you train on the track. And with a lovely system. And the only time it failed was when Johnny got drunk one day and he didn't come in and I was left, oh. And we went, I'd go out to the track and he'd say, what are you doing, Jerry? And he said, I have to do 4:48 or whatever. It'd give the time that Carl's after rabbiting up to me. It would have been like Chinese to me. He'd say half speed. And then I'd give him another time on another horse and he'd go full speed. And he'd go 3/4. And that, you know, he was talking the Irish language to me. And Carl's, God damn man, you got a clock in your head. And I hadn't a clue what time I was doing. It was just, Johnny was giving me the right information and I was able, and all it was using your head.
Yeah.
Bridle, 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 drop on the rail, boom. And it worked. So he offered me that, he says, you can ride for me. And when I said no, he was a world champion. I think he was world champion bull rider. So he came in and have a chat with me and he says, he was a German originally, but he was a Texan, but he says, you're going to regret this if you don't give it a go, you know? Because he says, I would have regretted if I didn't follow up my passion. And all I wanted to do was tell him the truth.
That you were too heavy?
Yeah.
Right.
But I knew by telling him the truth, you know, SI was going to hit the fan. We were all, you know. So eventually, I had to tell him the truth.
Had you been hiding your weight? How do you do that?
By looking at me. Looking at me, he didn't, you know, he never weighed.
Like a 1950s woman hiding her pregnancy in rural Ireland.
No, you look light, but I was obviously heavy boned. I was a jump jockey. I was never made to be a flat jockey, you know. And
so they never weighed you? And then they're like,
they never did weigh you, right. But I mean, it was not necessary. It wasn't, you know, that's fiction. Like, maybe they do them in them snobby Newmarket jars, but they never weighed me wherever I was, unless you were riding in a race.
Right.
I mean, you had to make a weight. But, so when he found out what the weight was, I was sacked on the spot.
Straight away?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
kind of like,
oh no, he lost it. Absolutely lost it.
And his plans were in smithereens.
Well, I was riding his 2-year-olds every morning and I was doing this and he was working out. But I was doing it, you know, I've learned it as a trainer. I'd rather have a good heavy lad holding one together than a light lad who's
running away,
unbalanced, and he'd do more harm than anything, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, when he calmed down, he came back to me and without me knowing it, he had contacted Jimmy Fitzgerald through Johnny Burke's father, Michael, who was a jockey. He's dead now since, and anyway, between them, they arranged that I was to go back to Jimmy Fitzgerald.
In England?
Yeah. And he said to me, I said, no way am I doing that. I said, been there, done that, and I've no interest. Anyway, he said, look, go back, give it a go. However long you give it a go, when you come back here, I'll give you a barn to train. And I knew if I left, I was never coming back.
Right.
This just, I knew in my head. I said, if I get on this plane, I'm never coming back here. And I haven't been back. And
it was a good offer to go back to. Like, I mean, however,
that point, I know.
Was it real?
Oh, it was real, don't you?
Okay, Jesus. Right. And so is that a regret that you didn't sit there and train?
Not at all. What? No, it's all part of it. Not at all.
But were you a kind of a pseudo assistant trainer at the time then?
No.
So what did he see in you that he...
No, but I mean, as I said to you earlier, I wasn't... Like, our work in Ireland, what they do in America isn't work.
Mm.
So, I mean, I'd go down and try and tack up my horse and you'd have a groom tacking it up for you and I'd say, you know, so because you're helping them, you're a great lad.
Yeah, so your work ethic shines out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually, rather than sit there drinking coffee, which you could easily do, I'd go down and watch the guy who was doing the bandaging.
Right.
You know, well, if you want to learn, it's up to you.
Yeah, totally.
So, and then, we were finished at 9 o'clock, so you either head off with Mike Smith and Kenny Black and head off to the lakes and go skiing, which of course I did. But equally, I'd stay around and learn a little bit or say, listen, this is, you know, I haven't even done a morning's work, you know.
That's like one of the great J1 stories I've ever heard, even though it wasn't technically a J1. Mm. It's like, 6 months, 9 months was this whole thing?
Yeah, yeah. And then headed back to Jimmy Fitz.
In England? Had you been to England before as a rider?
No.
No, right, so.
No, and
not quite.
I can honestly say he was the only man on this planet that's ever scared me.
Right.
Yeah. The very first morning I rode for him, we had an unmerciful fallout. I had just arrived back, and unknowns to me, Richie Fahey was his conditional at the time, and there was a couple of conditionals ahead of me, but unknowns to me, he had told everybody that this Canadian was coming into town, and he was going to show us all how to do it, right? So I was the Canadian. And of course I hadn't known none about it. And I'd known Mark Dwyer. Like Mark had learned to school with us in McCreary's from when he was apprenticed to Liam Brown. So we knew each other and I got on well with Mark. And Mark's a very funny fish. So we turned up, my very first horse to sit on. So we're up in the Malton Gallops. And he said, and there were 3-year-olds. So we're having our very first schooling session of the summer before they start their, you know, back in then days we had a break, then we had a new season started. And I'll never forget the horse, Capricorn Blue, and I ended up riding him in a chase for another trainer later on in his career. But anyway,
these had never jumped a hurdle before.
No,
yeah.
No, and I haven't jumped a hurdle in a year. I'm gone. Like, I've been in America. I've been treated like royalty up until yesterday.
Now you're schooling.
I've turned up with my American riding out gear in Malta, North Yorkshire, and I'm going. You could see me from the. from
here comes the cowboy.
And it was, and I, as I said to you, I hadn't heard what was going on behind the scenes, you know. But if you knew Fitzy, what Fitzy was good at was, if you wanted to be a jockey, he was going to make it difficult for you.
Yeah.
If you didn't want to be a jockey, he'd love you. Do you know?
Yeah.
So any of the jockeys were going to have a hard time. And Fahy Richie was brilliant. Like, he could take it, but he was a real shit stirrer. So anyway, we headed off to pop the hurdle. And whose owner was there?
Oh,
my honour. And we were sitting, we're going, and Tim the son was leading us, and there was Mark, and it was bum, 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 bum. I haven't seen a hurdle in how long, and I'm going, oh, Jesus Christ. Neither has the horse. So we're going in like that, and just as we get to the hurdle, the horse does a little bit of this, and I go, and he pops it, and we go up over the four, and it was brilliant. And Mark says, how do you go, Jerry? And I says, lovely, brilliant. I was more relieved for me, you know, because it was just after leaving the ground. I said, that was lovely. So as we turned around, circle, it was a huge string at the time. We looked down and Fitzy was doing, all I could describe it was an Irish jig, right? You could see him. You couldn't hear him. That's how far we were. But you could see him and he was like that. Now, if you know Fitzy, he had his face was redder than my jumper. He suffered from gout and he loved his drinking. As we got closer, we were all going, I said, what's going on, Mark? He said, no, did you run wrong? I said, no. I said, mine was grand. Did you do anything wrong? No, did you do anything wrong? No. And just as we got closer, so I'm going to swear, is that all right?
Go for it. It's too late now.
Yeah, it's too late. He goes, all I could hear was, you Canadian go back to Canada or wherever it is you came from and sell those newspapers. Then the light came on. I says, it's and he says, what did you do? I said, I'm not clue, man, I don't know what I've done. And then we get closer and he literally starts to dance. So it transpired that when the horse did that and I did that in front of his owner, I hit his horse. And that set it all off. So I'm, after being used to getting treated like royalty, right, by Carl Nasgar, 24 hours early, I'm not taking this shit. And I said, right, that's it. Fuck this. I haven't even been there for 2 lots. Mark says, settle, settle, settle. He'll cool down, settle. And I said, no, Mark, I'm out of here. He says, settle, come with me. So we headed off. And from that day to this, that was the first year Fitzy had a second yard. And there was a great man called Johnny Quinn. You know Johnny Quinn, the trainer?
Trainer.
We ended up best friends, living together. So Johnny took me under his wing. I raced down to the bottom yard and I hid there. And I wasn't seen again.
Wow.
Yeah, he scared the life out of me. But I should have. I should have just walked away. And got on a plane and left.
And gone where?
America. I should have gone back.
Back to America.
Where would you be now?
That's life. And if ifs and ands. And what was it Brendan Gray said last night? If my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. You know?
So how long do you stay there then?
In Fitzy's?
Yeah.
Oh, I left in 92.
So years?
I stayed up there. I was so grave. He was badly injured and just had to knock it on the head. I didn't get injured. I didn't get hurt in any falls I ever took until one fall, and then I hurt everything.
Right.
And they messed up the operation, and that slowed everything down. And all I ever wanted to do was ride in the Grand National. And the Injured Jockeys Fund was fantastic then. I mean, I earned more on the Injured Jockeys Fund than I did when I was actually riding. But they actually were going to pay me off because it was that bad, you know.
Right. And what happened in the fall?
It was a rotational fall. I broke my right leg at high up in the femur, most of my ribs, punctured lung, the shoulder, scapula, and I was in bad ways, in intensive care. It was funny, times have changed. There was an ambulance strike at the time, so I was lying at the back of the last fence in Newcastle, and they were cantering down to the next race, which you wouldn't do now.
20 minutes later.
The guy I was telling you about earlier, Chris Dennis, him and Jason O'Callaghan, they all work for the BHA over there now. They were cantering down. They looked at me and like, nearly got sick.
Jeez, that's incomprehensible nowadays. Like half an hour later in the next race and your man is still stricken on the ground.
Mm, couldn't get, there was an ambulance race, and they got me in and...
Were you conscious?
Yeah, but I thought I was speaking loud. I had a brand new pair of boots back in the day and there were zips up the back. So it was a new, it was around that era when zips were new. And I had a beautiful pair of boots. It was a lovely man in Newbridge who used to make the boots for the jockeys. Can't think of his name, but he was fantastic. Made them to measure. They were beautiful boots. And this young lad came down, this young doctor, and he was as white as your cup. And I thought I was talking to him. Use the zip, don't cut my boot. But I wasn't, he couldn't hear me. Like, don't cut my boot. That was all I was worried about, was my boot.
Do you remember the fall? Do you remember?
Oh, Jesus, yeah, I remember every bit of it.
Do you?
It was totally my fault.
And it hasn't blanked from your memory, there's
not at all.
Right.
What was your fault?
Because I should have pulled up. Problem was, Nigel's father, Colin, it was Full Circle. Do you remember the Full Circle Syndicate? You might not remember them anyway. It was Molinor anyway. He was third in the Grand National the year before, and I was riding him in this year's Grand National. And funny as it turned out, I think he broke up three jockeys. He broke up Tom Morgan, myself, and I stand corrected on Tom Taft, but he definitely broke up Tom and myself. I can't remember the third, but he broke up three jockeys. And I just assumed he was a good jumper because it was National. You used to say Grand National, oh, geez, he'll be grand. And as I was going out, Giga, we used to call him. Make sure you get this lad round. Don't put, it was a big thing for the Full Circle Syndicate. And that's all. That's why I never ever speak, and my staff are never allowed to speak to a jockey, because the last thing you say to him is what they'll hear.
Right.
Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. That's why.
What did you say?
I laughed at you saying he didn't.
What did you say to Ozzy Valentine?
You should leave jockeys alone. The last thing you say is what they'll hear. You know, so.
So you never rode in the Grand National in as a consequence?
I did, yeah.
Oh, you did?
I got injured, and instead of retiring, well, the injury was grand if they put the right pin in, but the pin they put in was too long. So when I went into rehab in Lillyshaw with all the footballers, it was Jamie Osborne, myself, and G Armitage. We were the three jockeys. I became very good friends with Ian Durant.
Oh, yeah.
The soccer players were lovely. Paul McGrath was there. Aston Villa used to train there, but Paul never trained. But the footballers were there. The Man City defender, Keith Curl, he was the richest defender at the time. So, but they were lovely, lovely lads.
They hated Osborne. Right.
They hated Osborne. Every evening at the end of training, we'd play sit-down volleyball, right?
Training as in?
Once we've done our rehab, we'd sit down and have a sit-down game of volleyball. In other words, we'd all be sitting down. We couldn't fucking stand up half of us anyway. And we'd be banged. There'd be rugby players, soccer players, rugby union players, soccer players. And there was one kid who did the motorbike dirt racing. And this was the rehab place. So Osborne couldn't help himself. He was such an arsehole. He used to get everybody wound up and wound up. So at every session, at the end of every session, there was this T-shirt. So it probably started out like one of the T-shirts there, football jersey. So just an ordinary T-shirt, like the one you have on you. But it was never washed. So whoever was the arsehole, whoever we voted every day, had to wear this T-shirt, right? For as long as I was there, Osborne wore it.
What was Paul McGrath
like? Paul McGrath, Villa were training there.
Right.
They weren't in rehab. Not really, yeah. No. But you'd see him sitting down while they were training. He never trained.
Yeah.
You know.
But
Ian Durant was fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved him. He was a lovely, lovely guy. And Keith Curl was a good guy.
Were you into football at that stage already?
I was always into football. Yeah. Always into football.
Did you play in Dublin?
Oh, my knee was... I had a bad fall on my knee and I had a rotation on my knee and I couldn't play.
Mm.
Even now, like, this knee goes out from under me very easy, so... Mm.
So you make it back and do ride in the National from that...
I came back. I did the rehab and the long pain... when it was York-Eber meeting where... You see, that's when our season started. So we'd all gather in York-Eber. All the Northern jump jockeys had gathered in York Eber. That was our blowout. And then Market Racing was where we started. So I had arranged to meet what you'd call Adrian McGoldrick. I can't remember the guy's name over there. So I'd arranged to meet him there to pass the vet, per se, to get ready for the season. Now, I had a chronic limp, and it was sore. But I genuinely thought I was a soft kid. Like, I couldn't train with the guys. I genuinely, with these lads, like, Ian Durant had a dead man's Achilles tendon in his knee or something. He was, like, he swore he got paid off £1 million or something because he was never going to play again. He played for Scotland again after that. And I was in a lot of pain, but I genuinely thought it was me, you know?
But it turned out the bar was too long.
I just went in and he passed me to ride. And I rang Hugh Barber, who was my surgeon up in Carlisle, and I said, Hugh, I'm in a lot of pain with this, and I've been passed. I says, great, I'm passed, but I can't tell you the pain I'm in.
Right.
So he's come up and see me. So I drove up, and at that time I was seeing Lynn, who lives in just beyond Carlisle. I'll never forget, so I went in to see the thing and came out. He had told me, Jesus, we're after making a mess. And I says, what's wrong? He says, it hasn't joined at all. So the pin was too big. So the leg, the femur was kept away like that. So I was doing all the training.
And the femur was still flapping.
It wasn't flapping, but the pin was, the bone hadn't knit, it hadn't stuck together because the pin was too big.
Right.
But the pain was shocking. And I remember coming out and sitting in a car park and I met Lynn's mother and I was crying my eyes out, like, because I thought, I have to do all this again, you know, it's not worth it, you know. And the only thing I had, I had a horse called Harley. And I said, right, he's going to be next year's national horse. I'll do that. And stupidly, I got back to riding the national. I remember passing Seagram won the national. And I remember looking up into the stands where you think Lynn is. Now, I mean, it's massive, so you wouldn't have it. And I looked up thinking, what was I thinking? What an anticlimax. What was that all about?
All for a year's work, like.
I said, what? And at that moment, the love of it went. I was gone. I didn't want to do it anymore.
Did you need to get that out of your system so that you didn't feel this constant regret in your
life?
Would
you believe, Jared, like, no matter where I go in the world, no matter what you've done, and somebody says, were you a jockey? Yeah, do you ride in the national? You know, you could have won every other race in the world.
And how do you feel about that question now?
I'm glad I did it, but it was... I'm glad I did it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're sitting on a plane, you're probably the only person on the plane who's done it.
Yeah.
You know.
Is it too soft nowadays, the race, you think, or...?
Yeah. Yeah, they've ruined it, but it's not their fault.
Yeah.
The whole world has gone mad that way, you know. I mean, like, Jesus, you can't say anything to anybody.
I remember in Cheltenham last year, I was over there, and the headline story on, I think, the BBC News was... First day of Cheltenham Festival, our biggest, like, 4 days of the year, our Olympics, and the headline story was they're hoping to cut down on animal fatalities. And I was just, where is this narrative coming from? And, like, I think animal fatalities were, obviously there was a lot of uproar about the national hunt chase this year, but the dichotomy between Britain and Ireland never seemed greater to me in terms of how we look after horses, because I just think that these could be people who eat, like, you know, meat from Lidl and Aldi and think nothing of it, but yet decry animal rights, decry trainers for not looking after horses. So
we pander way too much. We're so insecure. When I say we, my industry is so insecure.
Well, in Britain anyway. I'm not so sure about
here. It's like the industry as a whole. We're just so insecure that we're so worried about what that person thinks and what that person thinks, as opposed to what we think. Like, you know, and we should be more about what we think to a level. Do you know what I mean? Like, to a level. There's bad in everything. You know, as you seen the other night in the Greyhound thing, but you know.
When did you decide you wanted to be a trainer then? When you're lying in the hospital beds?
No, you're gonna laugh at this. My dream job is doing what you two guys do.
Oh, jeez.
Sitting here talking about sport.
So why didn't you do it?
Why didn't I do it? I'd know. And you see, times have changed. Like, you guys, this wasn't like this 15, 20 years ago.
No.
You know.
I started 20 years ago. I'm 22 years old.
Yeah,
so
you didn't have, like, it was RT1 and RT2, if you're lucky, and BBC Rule the Roost or whatever. There wasn't racing channels.
If you had a family member who worked there. That's how you got
in. Did you try to get into RT and was
never tried to get into RT? No.
No family member?
No. I knew better. But come here, how did the training come in?
Like, the training came behind because somebody, you'd be driving along or walking along and somebody, what do you do? And I hadn't got a breed, I had no title. What do? Like, when I was broke up, I was one of the first ever tipping lines. Do you remember them?
Oh, right, yeah. The 1550 numbers.
Yeah, I had Franny Norton. When Franny was a kid, he was driving along with a car with my name on the side of it. Franny Norton, sponsored by Jer Lines.
You had a tipping line?
Yeah.
Jesus, that is mad.
The first tipping line ever was Ray Goldstein and me.
That is mad.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And we were injured, and it was run by a guy in Glasgow. And the only way I could get out of it was demand a huge contract. The money was phenomenal.
Really?
Phenomenal.
So it was people ringing
and I
up. Have,
and I used to do it on the 18th green of a golf course. Had, you know, I'd go blah, 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 this is...
Who's Horse giving information on? Like
everybody's.
It? Yeah. Was it former information?
But back then, would you believe, like, because it was so new,
yeah.
My mates would see me coming and they'd just go like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas now it's access all areas.
Yeah, yeah,
you guys have...
You have your blogs and everything.
Well, I do the blogs for a different reason, but yeah. But that
that's
was
the reason
my,
for your blogs.
So I don't have to talk to the press.
Yeah. And yet he's here anyway. We've done well to get him today.
Yeah, well, I don't, yeah.
How did you become a trainer anyway?
I failed at whatever else I wanted to do. Simple as. I failed. The only thing I ever wanted to be was a jockey. And when that was taken away from me, I promise you now, and I can say it now, I'm 54 this summer. For the first 10 years of my training career, you weren't, like nowadays you have depression and you've named for everything that everybody suffers from. And but I don't know how we're still married. B, I don't know how I'm still alive. It was the worst time of my life.
A whole decade, 10 years.
Minimum 10 years, yeah. Until I started training winners regularly and became, right, you have a spot, now kick on.
So this was the thing that struck me most last night about being at the race course. We're in the parade ring and there's connections of all the horses, and I think there might have been 9 or 10 horses in our race.
9, yeah. Only I was one. In it, I finished last, in case you're feeling bad.
Medicine Jack.
Only one wins, right?
Tennessee, sorry.
Only one wins, everybody else goes home disappointed. Like, and that's repeated 8 races in every race course in the world, at every meeting and at every festival. So the ability that your sport and anybody who participates in your sport has to deal with perpetual losing. Defeat all the time.
As what McCoy said it, and he's right. I mean, so obvious, it's a losing game. You've got to learn to lose. Like, I had 4 runners last night. I was 2nd in the first race, beating a head or a short head. I was 3rd in the 2nd race, beating a length. I was 2nd in the third race, beating a head and a short head. And Tennessee was last. You know what I mean?
That's not a bad night, though, in a way.
No, but I'm able for that.
Mm.
Like, the difference between me and you is, like, your horse ran. Say your horse ran in the first race, and I'm training for you. You're now beating yourself up or you're down thing. I'm already on to the next race.
Yeah.
And the next race. And tomorrow I have runners, and the next day I have runners. Whereas you have to wait
until the next time the right horse
yeah.
runs.
That's why it's a numbers game.
Did it take you the decade to get used to losing? Is that what it was?
No. The decade to get used to being a nobody. Like, I genuinely thought I was going to be champion jockey. So if I'm going to train, I want to be champion trainer. There was never ever going to be a bit part player in me. And once then I knew I could handle being up at the top echelons of what I'm doing over here, then I was happy.
So that was your apprenticeship and becoming a master craftsman. It took you a decade to do it.
Oh, I'm the master craftsman, no. Master craftsman's John Ox, Dermot Weld, Aidan O'Brien. I'm doing well at what we do, but I haven't won Group 1s over here. And until I've won Group 1s, I don't consider myself on their team.
That's not really, though. That's like, you can't, if you're managing Colchester, you can't win the Premier League, so it depends on what you have.
Yeah.
And your strike rate would be...
My strike rate's good, according to what the lads say, but yeah. But when you die, you'll be remembered for the Group 1s that you won.
Mm.
They won't mention that. Oh, he won the XYZ handicap in Leopardstown.
That's very difficult to deal with in life, because your identity is entirely bound up in the success of the races that you win, and you can't control everything that happens in a race.
No, not in a race. I can't control everything that happens in my life to a degree. I mean, I can either go drinking, right, and half do my job, or I can do it the way I do it, which is to the best of our ability, which I believe, and I've said it 100 times, my team is as good as Aidan O'Brien's team, without question, probably even better. I just don't have their stock. So there's no excuse for my team if they don't perform like Aidan's team. But I'll forgive them everything bar, you know, the breeding of the horses, but I won't forgive them if they're anyways less professional than the best that there is.
It's that Paul O'Connell line about let's be world class at the stuff that doesn't require talent.
Yeah, just because you train in Colchester, doesn't mean, like, I mean, who? What's the guy who trained Donegal called? Jimmy.
Jimmy Guinness.
Yeah, he went in there. They were nothing.
Donegal started at Wickham, and obviously he worked his way up.
You know, he went in there and he turned Donegal into an All Ireland winning team.
So how
because
do you,
of his because of his attitude?
How do you do it? Because you've started to get really good horses, right? Over the last couple of years.
That only comes with, I mean, when an owner has a horse and who will we give it to, and they go straight away onto their computer and they look at the strike rates or they look at the winners. And as I've always said, winners breed winners. You know, you're not going to get horses unless you train in winners.
Having like Khaled Abdullah's down to...
That's just all of my Christmases in one go. Like, I mean, you can't... That's...
But that was earned.
I haven't
like,
got proof for this.
That was earned. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because your strike rate has been good. You'd be very well regarded as a trainer, and you do deserve to get a better horse at this stage. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's nice. It's lovely to hear. But when I started out, we were building our yard, and I never liked, you know, the Irish thing. Now, I'm more Irish than anybody, but I hated the attitude, it'll be grand. If a builder or a tradesman came in to me and said, it'll be grand, he was out.
Mm.
It won't be grand. This yard, I want this yard built for Khaled Abdullah, because one day he's going to be in here. Now, I was mad. That's what they thought. You would have said it. But that's what I demand. That's what I wanted back then.
You're dealing with the best class race in the world. Like, how are you going to aspire to be better unless you improve and improve and improve?
Yeah, but to me...
With Aidan O'Brien and Maiden. Aidan O'Brien left three runners in a Maiden by Galileo, and you have to somehow win that Maiden. Do you know what I mean?
And we do.
Yeah.
And as I said back then, if we don't win it and we're second to him, so what? They can't buy his, they'll buy mine.
Mm. Mm.
And that's how we built the business. It sounded arrogant, but you have to be that funneled. You have to be that focused.
Where did that come from? Where did you learn that?
You don't learn that.
But when did you realise that? Because
I always knew, like, when I was seven and I seen a racehorse, I knew what I was going to do. Like, as far back as I remember my mother sending me, and it's not her fault, they sent me to Ballyfin College to get away from horses. Because we're not from a racing background, right? And now Ballyfin sounds great. You know what Ballyfin
is? No,
Ballyfin has got world best hotel in a couple of years ago, right? And it wasn't the best hotel when I was there. It was what it was. And I was sent down there to get away from racehorses. But I knew that wasn't, you know, I'll see out my leaving. You told me if I do my leaving, that's what I'll do, and then I'm gone. And that's what I did. And I remember in leaving cert, where they were all, they were signing up for the university courses, you know, all of these things, and if you don't make the time, you're not going to get accepted.
CAO firm.
I was dragged out of study hall one night by, we called him Father Smood. He was the lad in charge of careers. And like, when I look back, he was a small little man, and I remember him dragging me out of into his office. He says, you haven't filled in your forms, your whatever, the CAO form, whatever the forms are. And I says, that's right, I haven't. And he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to be a jockey. And small and odd as he was, he reached back and hit me a slap. You cop onto yourself, you know. There and then I says, I'm going to come back and ram that up your arse. Mm. And I did. I remember going to England, coming back in a red, what I call a sports car with Lynn. I says, come on, I'll show you where I went to school. Now, the best thing that came out of Ballyfin was my best friend to this day is a lad called David Coughlin. He from Port Leash, and we're still buddies. But I remember driving into Ballyfin to find this little guy. When I was coming back from England on holiday, and he wasn't there, thank God. But that's the determination I had. I don't fucking show you. But I always felt that that's the way you were going all life, was I'll show you. And sadly, our game makes you go like that. Like, if you're not inbred into the industry, I'll show you. Does it make you chippy? Are you chippy?
Is that a bad thing? Like, if I'm an owner, I wouldn't mind having a chippy trainer who's determined to show the industry. Do you know what I mean?
I think hopefully the chips have smoothed off. I've got one on each shoulder now, rather than one, you know. But no, times have changed. Sure, it's not so much as you said about RTE. It's not how much that your daddy got you into the job as it was. There's a lot of us around that were never in the industry that are making it, and you're an example to the next guy. Who's an example to the next guy, and it's huge that way, and you can see it. You just don't have to be born into the game, as you did. to get a kickstart.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the people we've had on the show would be a testament to
that as
well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So the training starts to go well after the decade. What's the change? After a decade of bleakness, you start to have winners. How did you suddenly begin to produce winners?
What is it they say? What is it the sports psychologists say, that you have to do something 10,000 times?
10,000 hours, yeah.
Yeah, before you get that. As simple as that.
You just eventually learned how this thing worked. You
wrestled
with it long
enough.
Yeah,
and you just kept biting your head against the wall and just keep buying the horse, and we had to back ourselves, and we did. And I knew I was good at something. You know what it was.
Which part of it are you good at? Because it's a multi.
Lynn says I'm brilliant at delegating, which is, you have to delegate in our game.
You need to place the horse, you need to train the horse.
That's huge.
You need to get them fit.
I think your placing of the horses, in fairness, not run them for the sake of it as well, which I find that very frustrating. When I like to see a trainer who's planning, not overrunning a horse, planning it. And as a punter as well, like, you know that the horse is probably in good nick, like that he's not kind of just running there for the sake of it because it might have been a small field. That's one thing about you, in fairness. You have a good calibre horse, but you do place them.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what it's about. I have no interest, I have no interest in betting. So and then we met up with David Spratt over the years, and he helps us. You know, we have a team around me, Shane, and we discuss things. And like the final question is always, is that the right race? That's the right race. Right, let's go. Doesn't mean you'll win it.
Yeah.
As last night proved. But is that the right race? That's the right race. If it's not the right race, pull back.
How good is Colin Keane then?
Colin's fantastic. I mean, sure, listen, that's what life's about. You meet people who are going to help you along the way when timing's right. And Colin and I have met each other at the right time. And we're helping each other. And
mutual love.
No, it's mutual love. We're good workers. We work well together. As somebody said, it was a golfer and a caddy. I don't know how that works. I mean, I'm the boss. He's the jockey. I do my work.
He's the boss in the race.
Absolutely. And I mean, this thing that's going on in the BHA, is it BHA or BHB? BHA.
Yeah, it's both. Like,
well, whoever they are that are asking the questions before racing, listen, they have a different agenda. But if you're good at your job, you don't give instructions. If you're employing Ruby, Colin, whoever, why would you give them instructions? Mm. That's their job, you know, so.
I know, obviously, I'll tell them that. I remember her. But is this the best horse you've ever had, Siskin?
I don't know yet. No, I would say Endless Drama was a smart horse. At the minute, he's 3 from 3. We're very excited. He seems to have everybody else excited.
You're reverting to Aiden mode now, just talking the horse, kind of too kind of quiet about the horse, nuanced. You're not Gerald Lyons anymore.
Oh, I am Gerald Lyons about him. I have not got, this horse has kept us all calm. He's turned up, he's done what we've asked him. If he gets beat, I know the vibes out of Ballydoyle is we won't beat the second horse the next day.
Mm, he would need the run now.
Name a horse of Aiden's that hasn't needed the run.
Yeah. When he says they're just starting back?
Yeah, my arse, no.
Will you beat the American, this is the horse that Aiden gave us earlier in the season, the American Pharaoh horse. Monarch of Egypt, isn't it?
Yeah. Listen, if he wins, they reckon he'll improve for the run. Good luck.
When is that race?
Phoenix. The Phoenix on the 9th, 8th or 9th of August.
Looking forward to that now.
That'll be a cracker, yeah. He's the most likeable horse. He's going to do his job. He seems to be fairly chilled out about life.
That's what I'm saying. He keeps you calm. Like, the only box he hasn't ticked is ground. We ran him on quick ground or good ground. And
American bred.
Yeah, so... If the gods, the weather gods conspire against us and it's soft in the day, then that's a negative. Until we do it,
It's an unknown. For now, it's an unknown.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be thinking Breeders' Cup as well, haven't you? And even in the back of your mind.
No, we have, our discussions have got us to the Phoenix. And the Phoenix will point us whichever route we're going thereafter, whether it be the National Stakes, or the 6 furlong in Newmarket, or is he a Guineas horse or is he a Breeders' Cup horse? But we haven't gone beyond I'm not being glib with you, we haven't. His target has always been the Phoenix, and that's, until then, that'll decide where we go after that.
It'll be an interesting rematch.
Do you have an ideal size of your string of how many horses there are? Is there like a number that you think that's the perfect number for us?
I think we're at the perfect number, which is about 100, 150, like in that. We're 90 odd in my yard, in my main yard. and we've got a second and a third yard, which is the farm for rehabilitation and isolation. And then Jerry Kane, Colin's dad, has always got 30 plus of hours down there, bringing them along nicely. So I think that's a good number for me. Like, I feed them every morning, and I just couldn't imagine feeding 200 plus horses. Like, I grew up with Richie Fahey, and when Richie had two horses, he always said he was going to train 300 horses. And he's damn close to it.
I don't know how you could do it, like.
You know, but he said that back then, so, and he's doing it. I don't know. You're only as good as your assistant at that stage.
Yeah.
And if your wheels around you aren't oiled properly, there's going to be mistakes made.
Just one other thing. When your record of getting horses from other yards is obviously quite good, but what do you do in terms of the blank canvas?
Yeah, it's a blank canvas. David will buy them. He's in charge. He's over there now. I won't even hear them. They'll go to the farm, and then we'll have a discussion at some point once they've had a break and say XY is over there, and I'll bring them in. And we purposely, I never look them up.
They're blank canvas, like.
Yeah, never look them up, and he doesn't discuss them with me because he likes to hear what I'm thinking.
So what do you do to assess them? You run them, you watch them?
Just what I do every day of the week. It's repetition. And eventually you'll just go, all right, that's him there.
For a horse that you don't know and you haven't looked up, but you probably know a little bit about, do you get them into a gallop? Do you
I'd start from scratch because they're coming in from a break. Like, the idea of what we're doing is we're bringing them from a hard campaign of wherever they were. So my job is to freshen them up. So that starts in the farm.
And if they come in and they're a mile horse, you know that much about them, right? And are you?
He's saying he doesn't, though. This is interesting.
We don't look it up.
You don't even know that.
An idea.
It reminds me of Willie
Mullins.
When Willie got a 10-year-old horse who was well exposed, and he was a winter horse, it was in the summer. He brought him out galloping, and I was like, what? Why didn't? And he goes, oh no, I just wanted to see I wanted to look at him, see what he was like. I wanted to make a judgment on him by his gallop. And I was like, this horse is thoroughly exposed, like he's run over. Mm. And I found that interesting. Was like, the form book could tell you a million things, but it won't tell me what I want to see. Like,
is the galloping the key? You need to see them gallop to see in kind of
not just the gallop. Like, you gallop on Wednesdays and Saturdays, but it's how they behave.
Okay.
Through their training regime, like you've 12 weeks from fat grass to racetrack per se,
right,
give or take. So I mean, I love the October November through to the start of the flat season. That's a real good build up, and I give them, you know, they lead 2-year-olds, they sweeten them up, and then all of a sudden in March around Cheltenham time, I'll start thinking
where they're going.
And that's just, that just could be your Lincoln horse, or that could be this, or that
could be
that.
Siskin.
Hmm?
That could be Siskin. Yeah.
Never ever to 2-year-olds. The 2-year-olds don't come into your head. Like, until nearly this year we've trained them completely different to other years.
Why? Just the type we have,
yeah. Just give them a chance and paddock them.
Because Siskin is a horse, he's built quite well as well, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a nice horse. He's a very straightforward horse.
I've never heard Ger as politically correct about a horse. He's just trying to keep him under wraps, you know.
You've all seen Siskin. He's ran 3 times, he's won 3 times.
What more do you want me to say? The best horse he's ever had.
I don't think he can say that. No, he's not yet.
Like trying to name your favourite child.
Well, I was second in a Guineas with one, so would you not put him ahead of him?
We'll see.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's a fair point. Right, a reminder, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by GoRacing.ie. The Tote Irish Injured Jockeys Charity Fund remains at €5,479.44 after bold statement failed to land a blow last weekend at Naas. This weekend's Irish action will come from Limerick and Navan tomorrow, while on Sunday the Group 3 Brownstown Stakes is the highlight at Fairy House. In the UK tomorrow, the July Cup is the showcase in the final day of the Newmarket July Festival. On Sunday, Aidan O'Brien will look for more Group 1 glory, where his Japan will likely start a warm order favourite in the Grand Prix de Paris at Longchamp. What have you got for us this week, Johnny?
Yeah, the interesting thing about Fairy House are doing a thing where they're celebrating a couple of thousand years of horses in the region. And it kind of sounds daft, but if you read their press release, today is the 12th of July, which is obviously quite
important.
Quite a contentious day, but reputedly the horse that King William rode on was key to him surviving the battle, and he could trace his roots back to Arab bred horses and all this stuff anyway. But Fairy House is celebrating that. But the interesting thing about the Brownstown Stakes, and you may know this, there's an anomalous stat to do with this race in terms of one trainer.
Go on.
Aidan O'Brien has never won this race, which is quite unusual. A group race of its that's well established.
Takes a very good trainer to win a Brownstown.
It does. It does. Queen Katrine.
I've won it a few times. Bergbawn.
Bergbawn. I don't even remember Bergbawn.
There you go.
Dermot Weld, William McQuarrie, Jim Bulger, the aforementioned Roger Varian, and Gerald Mosse is over to ride for Ed Walker in the race. But it's a cracking renewal. I must give a mention to Jack Davison, who we obviously had on the show. He's Black Magic Woman running it and would have a good chance as well. Perfection might be the horse to beat, but it's a fascinating race, and Fairy House are doing plenty to promote it.
Okay, what is your actual tip this week?
My actual tip this week is Gavin Cromwell's only runner in Sligo. A beautiful track if you haven't visited it. Do you run many down there?
None.
Never?
I have done, not anymore.
Tight track. Gavin's horse, if I can find it here, is called Lucky Road. Who's ridden by Conor McNamara, Eric McNamara's son, good £7 claimer. Gavin Cromwell, his last 33 runners, 11 have won. And he's obviously had place horses. I don't know. I think he's just gone to another level as a trainer. His ability to place them, and they're often well backed. This horse, I would imagine, might be well fancied, I'm guessing, on Sunday, but my nap anyway.
Okay. Just that gets me thinking, in terms of the start of the year, is there a specific number of wins you have, or is it like placing a good horse that's going to have a great campaign?
What do I aim for?
Yeah, what are your success?
As many winners as possible.
That's it.
We have a wall in my office that is just a blank canvas at the start of the year, and that's to be filled. And then you aim, hopefully, quality. Hopefully aim, you know, the more quality the better.
Buy as many tickets as you can to win as many lottery opportunities.
Well, we run our horses, and your aim is to stay in the top echelons, stay where you were, always try and beat last year's total. But ultimately, every year has been trying to win a Group 1.
I got the stats up here lately, 1994, so in your 26th year training now. And just in terms of the percentages, and I think this is where you're at really, from 2014, so the last 6 years, including this one, 2016, 17, 19, 14, and 18% so far this year. And when you talk about taking on, like, it's not like Ger has a million smart 2-year-olds who win a maiden first amount. That really is an incredible strike rate, but it's also a testament to the fact that he's running horses selectively. And I think a lot of trainers fail in that regard.
All right. Is there any other of these races you think we need to preview?
I suppose we could talk about your runners. You're three at the weekend.
We've a light enough weekend. We've won in a 3-horse race at Navan. The ground must be quick, so the lads aren't turning up. Caftan has a first start over 10. That'll be interesting. Three interesting horses in the first race at Navan. I start a nice 2-year-old by Kodiak, filly, in that. And then the filly we run on Sunday. I ran her the other day in Bellystown, which I should never have done. She was my best 2-year-old last year. And her wind went on her. I mean, one day it was just like an exhaust backfiring. And we lost her and literally were back trying to grasp at her. But
it's
she was
retrieval.
Yeah, if I can win with her, if I can win her maiden, like if, for example, she won her maiden on Sunday, I don't think we'd race her again. We'd just let them have her. She's owned by an American guy, a good guy. And but she's gorgeous, filly. I trained her damn. But that's racing. We were about just to start her in the Group 3 at Naas last year, en route to the either the Albany or the Queen Mary, and boom, just went.
In terms of genetics and the pedigree of that, and her broodmare kind of potential down the line, how much of a negative is that?
Yeah. I mean, I've said it before. I don't think sires should be allowed go if they've had a wind up. You know, it is
that's
hereditary.
It's in Germany, is it? Is one of the?
It is, yeah. But you know, it. Listen, these rules. But it is hereditary, and it is a negative.
The July Cup, obviously, you'd like to see 10 sovereigns. I don't know what you, Ger. A 3-year-old in a race like that, I think, is an awful hard task.
I think Advertise wins it.
Advertise did the job very well the last day. Frankie's, I think, was that the day Frankie had 5 winners? But that'll be a fascinating race. I think a 3-year-old taking on Harden Sprinters is very, very tough. And he still has to prove he's a top-class sprinter in any event.
Who?
10 Sovereigns.
Yeah, he's been disappointing this summer, you'd have to say. I just can't see past the top horse, and Frankie's riding out of his skin at the minute.
In his early 50s.
Gerard, good stuff.
Late 40s.
Late 40s,
brother. For coming in and
pleasure
sharing with us so honestly. I'm really looking forward to the rest of your season. Best of luck with it.
Thanks, Gerard.
And Johnny, hopefully you tipped a winner for us this week.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. But it's obviously on the Gaelic Games front, it's a massive weekend. There's an awful lot going on between both codes. We have four meetings in Ireland as well, different parts of the country. And get yourself racing if you're up to nothing.
Indeed. And if you are, check out goracing.ie. They bring you Friday night racing every week here on Off the Ball. We'll be back next week at the same time, same bat channel. Stay tuned.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're on.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
Join Roots Betting now for a risk-free first bet up to €100. That's right. New Irish accounts can enjoy a risk-free